Support for Modern Love comes from Living Proof. Living Proof.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Proof knows you have more important things to do than styling your hair. Get styles that last two times longer when you use their Prime Style Extender. Use the code PRIME at livingproof.com for a free travel size Prime Style Extender with your $20 order. We are the science. You are the living proof. And by Helix Sleep. Working with the world's leading sleep scientists, Helix Sleep has developed custom mattresses that bring a reported 30% improvement in overall sleep quality. Visit helixsleep.com/modern to get $50 off your order.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Sometimes our most rewarding relationships come in unexpected packages. And sometimes people on the outside just don't get it. Actor Ruth Negga reads this week's essay. She stars in the new film Loving, which tells the story behind Loving v. Virginia, the landmark 1967 Supreme Court case that legalized interracial marriage. Ruth Negga reads Caroline Levitt's essay, My Touchstone and a Heart of Gold.
I never intended to get a tortoise. I was in a troubled relationship with a man who was the opposite of me in almost every way. While I felt exiled every time I left Manhattan, he yearned to move to the country. When we discovered we both wanted a pet, though, we thought we finally had found common ground. I was allergic to dogs and cats, so we scouted for other possibilities at the pet store. Finally, I pointed to a crowded tank, a glossy shell, and a pair of orange-ringed eyes.
"This is what you want?"
he asked doubtfully. I nodded. We named the tortoise Minnie, and by the time we realized she was a he, after an eye-popping male display, the name had stuck. "How could we have gotten this wrong?" my boyfriend said. But I didn't care. How could I not love this strange little creature? Minnie scuttled around our apartment, taking delicate little steps, sometimes eating lint off the carpet. He clapped his jaw as if he were speaking and drew up his long, lovely neck to sniff at the air. I bathed him in the sink. I hand-fed him avocado, wiggling it so he would think it was live food. And sometimes he shut his eyes as if the morsel was simply too delicious to bear. I even kissed his shell.
"You're a little obsessive about him," my boyfriend accused. "It isn't normal." He didn't like the way I talked to Minnie every day, eye to eye. "He's just a reptile," he stressed. And though he had professed to want to marry me, he began to mention it less and less. The more time I spent discovering the tortoise, the more my boyfriend uncovered things about me he didn't like. My friends were now too loud. And why couldn't I trade my jeans for something more feminine, with a flounce? One weekend, when he had gone out to spend the bright summer day with his parents at their country club, I was sitting alone watching an old movie on TV, the tortoise on my lap, a book on the table for later. As I stroked Minnie's leathery head, I began to realize how calm and happy I was. I had a more fulfilling relationship with the tortoise than I did with the boyfriend. Minnie and I let each other be who we were. It wasn't long before I broke up with the boyfriend, and Minnie and I moved to a small apartment in Chelsea. I knew the breakup was the right thing to do, and I wasn't as dejected as I had feared. Because as soon as I opened the door, I heard rustling, and there was Minnie, stretching out his beautiful neck in greeting. Every night I would take Minnie out of the tank and put him on the table and tell him about my day. Sometimes I'd cry because I was lonely.
but Minnie always seemed to listen and clack his jaws at just the right places in my narrative. At night, when I woke up, all I had to do was look across the room, and there he was, a Buddha in a shell, wise and deeply comforting. I didn't want to be in a relationship again where someone wanted me to pretzel myself into someone I wasn't. "You're odd," my ex had told me. "All you want to do is watch movies, read books, and play with Minnie." He meant it as a rebuke, but I kept thinking, what was wrong with that kind of nirvana? "Don't worry," my friend Jane said, when I cried that maybe I was too strange, that maybe no one else would ever love me. "Someone's going to find that so-called oddness your most appealing trait." Because Minnie was so important to me, I began to measure my dates by how they treated him. If dates gave Minnie the stink eye, that was that. If they expressed interest or wanted to hold him, it made me warm to them. But sooner or later a date would ask, "Do we have to eat with the tortoise on the table?" Or, "This is a pet?" And my heart would shudder. When I met Jeff, a smart, funny journalist who took me to a toy store for our first date, I was anxious about how much I liked him. I invited him to dinner, which I admit was more dare than a meal. Minnie was on the table in a glass tank with us. We were having spaghetti. Minnie was having live worms. Jeff cautiously sat down. He looked from me to the tortoise tank and didn't say a word. When Minnie lunged for a worm, Jeff flinched. But he didn't get up and leave, and at the end of the evening, he asked for another date. He didn't object weeks later when I told him I wanted us to take Minnie to Central Park, and he came with a picnic basket and a little wrapped gift. I opened it, and inside was a little red rubber squid toy. "I thought he'd like it," Jeff said, wiggling it at Minnie, who lunged towards it. Where my old boyfriend told me how obsessive I was about Minnie, Jeff celebrated our connection, making a fake newspaper cover featuring Minnie and me. "Startling tales of tortoise life. She holds me under the faucet," the headline blared. 2 years later, we married and moved to Hoboken, New Jersey, where Minnie resided in a glass tank on a table in my writing studio. All I had to do to see him was turn around. When Jeff and I had a child, I got critically ill with a rare blood disorder. I was in the hospital for 3 months and at home in bed for another 6. Jeff would bring in our son every morning and set him on the bed so I could cradle and play with him. One day he brought Minnie in a towel and set him on the bed too. Minnie and I had been together for 20 years when his body began to fail. He refused to eat, wouldn't walk, and even his beloved squid toy didn't interest him. I hadn't known how old Minnie was when I got him, so I couldn't tell if this was the natural end of a long life or the crushing finish of a young one. The vet told me his body was shutting down and that the kindest thing I might do for him would be to put him to sleep. I cried. I couldn't do it. I couldn't give him up. One afternoon, when Jeff wasn't home and our son was at school, I heard a noise in my office. When I walked in, Minnie wasn't moving, and when I lifted him, his legs fell gracelessly against my hand. Sobbing, I carried him outside to our postage stamp backyard. I wanted to bury him there so he'd always be a presence near me, but the ground was rocky and I couldn't dig a hole deeper than 4 inches. Barely enough to cover his shell. Worse, it started to rain, soaking me. I kept imagining Minnie's bones floating up from the ground like something out of Stephen King's Pet Sematary. So I wrapped him in a towel and ran 2 blocks to the vet, where, covered in mud and weeping, I let them gently take him from me. I grieved. course I grieved. But when I told people how much I missed him, how I couldn't write without him in my office, they didn't get it. He was like a pet rock, my mother said. How can you miss a rock? People told me about their dogs and cats who had died. And I thought, it's easy to love the beautiful, the normal. But what about the gifts of loving the strange, the uncommon, the odd? I felt I would never get over him. Then one day I came home to find Jeff grinning. Come to your office, he said. We walked upstairs, and there on the wall was a painting of Minnie, walking on our wood floors, moving toward an open doorway, his head happily aloft. I looked at Jeff, astonished. An old high school friend, a painter, had captured Minnie on canvas, and Jeff had hung the portrait inches from where Minnie's tank used to be. Recently, when I got up to go to work in my office, I thought about how, for a while, I was unlucky in love. I no more fit in my old life than Minnie had in his tiny pet store tank. I remembered my ex telling me he wanted a girlfriend who was more normal. Then I looked across the hall to see my husband waving and beaming at me. And I gazed at the wall, and there was Minnie. A strange little figure. Uncommon, odd, and completely and always beloved.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building, find an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Ruth Naga, reading Caroline Leavitt's essay, My Touchstone and a Heart of Gold. Is there a new tortoise in Caroline's life? More in a minute.
Living Proof products make life easier. Just ask Bex from New Zealand.
So yeah, I'm currently living in a van and driving across the US with my boyfriend. So both Prime Style Extender and Perfect Hair Day Dry Shampoo allow me to go longer between washes, so my hair stays cleaner for longer, which when I was working in Africa and now currently living in a van is great for me because it's a little longer between showers.
Use the code PRIME at livingproof.com for a free travel size Prime Style Extender with your $20 order.
We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Now for a postscript from this week's writer, Caroline Leavitt.
People did think I was completely nuts to have a tortoise. I had his photographs up on the wall. I talked about him all the time. And when they came over to my apartment, a lot of times people would be aghast. But I got so much from that tortoise, and I loved him so much that I really didn't care what people said. I just felt, you know, they just didn't understand.
Caroline's essay really struck a chord with people. She received many responses, especially from people you guessed it, who have tortoises for pets.
It set off some really interesting discussions because people were talking about what drew them to an animal and what does it really mean to love a certain kind of animal as opposed to a cute and fluffy puppy, which is really easy to love.
It's been 3 years since Caroline's essay was published, and she hasn't replaced Minnie with another pet. She says she'll never stop missing the simple joys that Minnie gave her, like their daily ritual of spending time outside together.
Sometimes I would just walk him up and down the street, and he would walk very, very slowly in front of me, and I would walk behind him as close as I could. And I had to stay pretty close because a lot of times people thought he was dinner, actually.
Caroline says her love of Minnie helped her navigate some challenging times. She used the same patience she learned while following her tortoise in Central Park and applied it to her writing career. Her first novel was successful, but the next seven were all failures. When her ninth novel was rejected by her publisher, she nearly gave up. But then she decided to shop the manuscript to another publishing house, and they saw something others had missed. The book, called Pictures of You, became a New York Times bestseller.
Minnie really did change the way I saw the world. I really felt that there was some sort of communion, and it changed me in the sense that I began to realize that there are things that are not so obvious, and maybe they're not so beautiful to most people, but they're just as profound and just as important. And it made me think about how many other profound, amazing connections there are in life, and sometimes we don't even see them.
Caroline Levitt. Her latest novel is Cruel Beautiful World.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building, find an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
It was released last month. You can see pictures of Caroline and Minnie at wbur.org/modernlove. Earlier, you heard the voice of Ruth Naga, who stars in Loving. The movie tells the story of Mildred and Richard Loving, a Virginia couple whose mixed-race marriage led to the 1967 Supreme Court decision that ended the ban on interracial marriage. We asked Ruth why she chose to read this week's essay.
It made me quite emotional, and I really connected to the idea that there's one line when she says, it's easy to love beautiful things, but what about the gifts of loving the odd and the strange? And that very much resonated with me because I love the odd and the strange.
Actor Ruth Naga. Loving is in theaters now. We'll hear from Daniel Jones after the break.
Support for Modern Love comes from Helix Sleep. Working with the world's leading sleep scientists, Helix Sleep has developed custom mattresses that bring a reported 30% improvement in overall sleep quality. Visit helixsleep.com/modern, answer a few simple questions, and they'll create your completely customized mattress, starting at just $600, and ship it right to your door for free. You get a 100-night risk-free trial. And for you modern couples, they can customize each side. Go to helixsleep.com/modern and get $50 off your order. That's helixsleep.com/modern.
We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Daniel Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times, says people often have lists of characteristics they're looking for in a love interest, but fewer have an actual litmus test. But when it comes to this essay, the litmus test, the presence of many, was about a lot more than just a tortoise.
You know, it was really an important sort of reveal for who these guys were and whether they were willing to accept someone and love someone who considered herself odd. And she sort of came up with this like masterful test. Like, if you like this tortoise, not only because you're an animal lover, but because you have some sort of fondness for strange animals, then you are maybe the guy for me. And it completely works and leads to the guy who she's with to this day.
Dan Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times. Next week on Modern Love, Mark Duplass on a fairy tale romance where one character is pulled off course.
To try to make sense of why she had to live in this medicated haze, I thought of her condition as being like an old television, the type where you have to turn the dial to change the channels. For some reason, Julia had become stuck between channels, so all that was broadcasting in her mind was crackly white noise. And it drove her mad, right into the halls of a psychiatric ward.
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Parati, and Amory Sievertson. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. Ruth Naga was recorded at the studios of the Radio Foundation in New York City. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.
Hi, this is Charles Duhigg. I'm a reporter at The New York Times and the author of the book, The Power of Habit. I'm starting a new podcast trying to help people figure out how to change. And so we're looking for people who are facing a big dilemma. Maybe you and your partner want to try an open relationship, but you don't know how. Or perhaps you're estranged from a family member and wondering whether to reconnect. Or you have a problem at work. You want a promotion. You're having a hard time being a manager. Whatever it is, we want to hear what you're going through and see if we can't help you make it better. We won't be using any names in the podcast, so we can talk anonymously. Email me your stories at podcaststories@nytimes.com. That's podcaststories, all one word, @nytimes.com.